It's 8 p.m. This is Radio Ghana.
A very good evening to you, and you're welcome to Behind the News. My name is Agatha Samoa, and tonight, World AIDS Day in Ghana observed at WA. What are the key actors saying about the pandemic in the country? Sale of Merchant Bank, fresh suit filed at the Commercial Division of High Court. What happens to the original rate? And disability is not inability, so says the popular adage. But is there anything more society can do to highlight the plight of the disabled? Stay tuned for the next 1 hour as we bring you details of all these stories on our program tonight. You can also join the discussions by text in 0266677570, 0266677570. But first, Abraham Donko is here with a summary of the day's news.
The CEO of Tobinco Pharmaceutical Company, Dr. Tobin, has been picked up by the Economic and Organized Crime and kept at the Nima Police Station in Accra. The arrest follows recent confrontation between the workers of Tobinco and officials of the FDA who attempted to lock warehouses of Tobinco. Vice President Kwesi Arthur has expressed the government's determination to bring to an end mother-to-child transmission of HIV generation while keeping mothers and the entire family alive. He was speaking at this year's World AIDS Day in WA. And President Mahama has called on African leaders to grant the Pan-African Parliament legislative powers to enact laws for the continent to tackle issues. President Mahama was speaking when the high-level panel on illicit financial flows from Africa conferred with him on its consultative meeting at the Flagstaff House in Accra.
Behind the News, live on Radio Ghana. Crowd text line again is 0266677570. Since its discovery in 1981, HIV and AIDS have claimed over 30 million innocent lives. The disease was first discovered in Ghana in 1986, and since then, many Ghanaians have fallen victims to the pandemic, with 160,000 children becoming orphans. Currently, Ghana's prevalence rate is 1.37 as of 2012, down from 3.67% in 2003. New infection has also reduced from 26,000 per annum to around 8,000 in 2012. EDEBA was held in the Upper West Regional Capital, WA, to step up the fight against HIV and AIDS. The focus is on moving closer to zero HIV and AIDS world. On Behind the News tonight, we ask, what are the success stories and failures in the fight against HIV and AIDS, and how is the problem of stigmatization keenly being addressed? First, we have on the line Swala Abdul Wahab, who is our Power West Radar correspondent, who today observed the National Day on HIV and AIDS. Swala, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Agatha.
Well, Swala, can you update us as to how the day was observed?
Thank you very much, Agatha. I should say the observation of the World Day in the Upper West region here has been very successful. A number of activities are taking place at least 2 days to the climax of the whole event. And I should say this is the first time the region has hosted the World AIDS Day since its inception. The Director General of the Ghana AIDS Commission and some of the directors of the Commission started a visit to the Central Ahmadiyya Mosque in Wahia and interacted with the congregation. They were given a fair hearing, and the Director General was able to send her message across to the congregation. And the focus of the message was that HIV is now a reality, and whether we like it or not, we have to give way. For that matter, everybody should play active role in helping to bring down the spread of the disease, as well as assist in bringing down stigmatization against people who are infected with the disease. The same message was carried to the interdenominational church service, which was held yesterday at the Presbyterian Church in Wadia. That was after the commission, together with the RCC, interacted with freshmen in the region to drum home the same message. Then this morning, around 7:30, there were a number of school children, grown-ups, of course, who gathered at the forecourt of Regional Foundation Council and embarked on a procession through some principal streets of Wah to let the people of the region, precisely, or particularly those in the regional capital, know that the region was hosting the national celebration. And I believe through the procession, the attendance at the Jubilee Park was very massive. There were people all over from all the districts, people who are infected with HIV, Health of Department, DCE, and other categories of people were all at the regional, were all at the Jubilee Park this morning to celebrate the day.
Did the officials say anything about the availability and affordability of the antiretroviral drug for persons living with HIV and AIDS? Did that issue also come up?
Yes, the issue of availability and affordability came up when the president of NAPLAS, I cannot immediately collect his name, when he took his time to address the government. He acknowledged the support the Ghana AIDS Commission has been given to the association, but said there are occasions that coming by the antiretroviral drugs becomes difficult. And because of that, some people are unable to withstand the disease and have to give in. So his appeal was that government should make sure that the drugs are always available and affordable for people who are in need of them, so that they will not live their lives untimely.
And you said the programs were highly patronized by the townspeople.
Yes, they did. And a lot of people also volunteered. You know, there is this concern by stakeholders in the health sector that people are not willing to come forward to test for their HIV status. But I should say, today's occasion, there were a number of people who volunteered to be tested for their HIV status. And I should say, it is a positive sign if we should have a similar situation wherever such activity takes place. The issue of people not willing to test for their status will no longer be a serious problem as it is now.
So I understand you have some people lined up that you want to talk to.
Yes, I have here the Upper West Regional Focal Person in the name of Mr. Gordon Damayele. I would want to find out from him what he makes of the hosting of the region of the world since the week has just ended. Thank you very much. You are welcome to behind me.
Thank you.
What is your impression about the hosting of the Upper West region of this year's World AIDS Day?
In fact, my impression has been that the occasion has been very successful, and what makes me particularly happy is the fact that Since the World AIDS Day celebration was instituted, this is the first time we have had it in the Upper West region. Other regions have hosted it, but this is the first time we have had it. And this year's event was a unique one in the sense that there were several activities that heralded the commemoration. And indeed, the commemoration of the event here actually has brought the message of HIV and AIDS closer to the people. Even though people, it has been, the news has gone around the whole region, the fact that we have had the national commemoration of the 2013 World AIDS Day has brought the message very closer. And all the speakers who made their statements actually tackled the issue of stigmatization and how we should marshal resources and efforts to combat the spread of new infection.
Yes, during the address, it came up that the prevalence rate of the disease in the region stands at 1.2, while that of the national prevalence is 1.37. You must have done a lot to bring this down. What do you think precisely accounts for this development?
But a lot of activities have taken place, mainly because of Ghana AIDS Commission's interventions. You know, funds are provided to district assemblies to undertake HIV-AIDS activities in the district. And the other NGOs in the region and even at the district level also access funds from the same Ghana AIDS Commission to do specific activities in the community. And there are CBOs, that is community-based organizations, and state-based organizations, all at the community levels that are engaged. So in fact, a lot of work is going on, and that I think that has brought us this far, and what this in the prevalence rate is a low.
Agatha, that's the Upper West Regional Focal Person of HIV, Mr. Gordon Thoma-Yele. He is not the only person with me here. I have here also the Upper West Regional Chairman of NAPLAS. He is in the person of Moro Yalbar. I would like to find out from him what he makes of the salvation of this event.
Yeah. Hello. Yeah, the today event, in fact, I've came up with so many things about concerning HIV and AIDS. In fact, the presentation made by the people, all the speakers that made statement on the event, in fact, I pick up a lot of issues that they brought up. And in fact, all the presenters came out with the stigma and discrimination issue, which is very important for persons living with HIV and AIDS.
Since you've become infected with this disease, how have your family members, friends, and even the society been treating you?
Yeah, actually, the beginning, I was diagnosed on 19 February 2007. And in fact, at that time, it was difficult for me to come out to tell my colleagues or any other family member that I have diagnosed HIV positive. And gradually, the stigma, because of the reducing of the stigma now, in fact, I don't feel annoyed to tell my family that I have living with HIV. I'm free in the community. Everybody know me.
Does that mean the stigma against you as an infected person has reduced?
Actually, it hasn't reduced, but to me, as I'm living with HIV, I'm proud on that. I didn't mind whatever stigma they are doing on me. I didn't mind.
So how easy is it to come by antiretroviral drugs, and how affordable is it?
Actually, it is easy to come by the antiretrovirals if you are accept the counselors what they are telling you to go about the antiretroviral.
Are you able to afford it?
Yes, I'm able to. At the beginning, in fact, I struggled a lot, but later, by 2-3 months, it is okay for me. From that up to date, in fact, My ART, I'm not joking with it.
Yes, you are the regional chairman of NAPLAS. Have some of your members been complaining to you of maybe a problem of discrimination?
Yes, people have been complaining.
So what do you do when they complain?
Actually, what I do is that when they complain, sometimes they came with a complaint about their family. In fact, I do visit their family, settle their family down so that I came out with the issue of HIV. Now, HIV is not more the issue that Ghana is supposed to fear. So sometimes it's the ignorance of the disease that the stigma, the people are stigmatizing their relative when he or she diagnosed HIV positive. So I always went go to the family and then sit down with them and talk about the HIV and AIDS status. This helped the patients so that the stigma coming from the family is somehow to the patient.
So Agatha, you heard the regional chairman of NAPLAS, Muru Yalbar, telling us how he tries to mediate between his members and other family who sometimes try to stigmatize them because they are HIV infected. Let me come back to Mr. Godwin, the regional focal person, to find out now that the region has achieved a figure that is lower than the national figure, what measures are you going to put in place to ensure that you further reduce this figure downward?
One thing that we are going to concentrate now on is about behavioral change. You know, the information about HIV and AIDS, as I said earlier, has spread to every corner of the region. But the issue now has to do with behavioral change. People have heard it, but they are not willing to change. So we want to concentrate our effort on that. And that calls for actually going to the grassroots to talk to people. After they have heard the information, then they should, you know, change their attitudes. And one other thing is the resources. You know, these assemblies are mandated to contribute 0.5% of their common fund to the MSHAP account for HIV AIDS activities. And in fact, it is not only this region, but all other regions, the assemblies are reluctant in setting aside that amount for the activities. By this region, for the regional minister being very proactive, being developmental, no-minded, is insisting that all assemblies should set aside that 0.5% to intensify HIV-AIDS education. So we believe that if that money is actually set aside, resources will be available for the district focal persons to concentrate on their work, to do a lot of activities so that we can actually, you know, bring the figure further lower than it is now.
Agatha, you said the regional focal person calling for more resources to be able to reduce the further the figures downward.
Well, Swala, we want to thank you for your time with us tonight. Swala Abdul-Wahab is our Part West regional correspondent, and also joining us on the line is Dr. Azia, and so is the Upper West Regional Minister. Good evening, Doc, and welcome to the program.
Yeah, good evening, and thank you very much, and thank all the wonderful listeners.
Doc, why was your region selected to host the National AIDS Day? Is it because the pandemic is serious in your region?
Yeah, thank you very much. Well, for us, it was an excitement to have it. First and foremost, because it was an opportunity to get the word directly from our own region to our people so they can get a more serious impact on the community. As you can see, it was possible to interact with persons living with AIDS in the community. It was possible to have school children, even acting as school children, being present. It was possible to have the chiefs and people, the people of this region, all present. It was also possible, for instance, now for my DCs and others to listen to the speech I made, what the vice president said, Dr. Angela of Ghana AIDS Commission, and many other speakers said. And then, of course, through the various agreements. Of course, commitment that we had to do while they are here. So all that for me was a very good visible. I was having very life acting and acting directly with our powers and people.
Hello, Doc, could you reposition yourself, or we can hardly hear you.
Okay. Are you okay?
Hello, yes, it's much better.
Hello.
Hello, Doc.
Hello.
Yes, Doc, please go ahead.
Yeah, so secondly, too, as I said, I mean, it's a very, very big national event that brings a lot of resources to my community here. And I believe in the fact that you need to create your own resources to develop your own area. And for me, the fact that it is the first time I'm coming to this region, coming with the whole Vice President of the Republic of Ghana, and then bringing all people from all over the country and even all over the world, because I'm, as I can remember, the ambassador to the U.S. ambassador to Ghana was here, and many other people were all here. So for me, it was a big event that brought along a lot of resources back to my region, and I appreciated that.
So how is the Regional Coordinating Council committed to the fight against HIV and AIDS in the Upper West?
Yeah, as you just listened to Gordon, the Domayele, who is my focal person at the RCC. Before him, there was Madame Fati, who is no longer at the RCC, in social welfare RCC. And they have worked excellently in terms of coordinating the activities of the AIDS, Ghana AIDS Commission on AIDS activities. Indeed, alongside that, the Ghana Health Service Directorate has been very, very helpful in terms of their commitment to the West. And that all is coordinated also partly from our office. But particularly, many of my assemblies have contributed directly to sustaining the fight against HIV and AIDS. And of course, the fact that I have also, as I went around doing my monitoring, usually I'm able to communicate the issue of AIDS to the people, and so it has ensured the assemblies are more serious, are more committed to development. Particularly when I saw the report on the contributions of the assemblies, that some of them didn't contribute as expected. Of course, I had to send a letter and send a word to them to change immediately, which has actually contributed to partly to bringing down the rate of infection and the percentage rate in relation to the national rate down.
So, Doc, do you think the National Day being held in your region would succeed in bringing the message to the doorsteps of the people of the region?
Yes, I partly said that earlier. Today, for instance, we had people seeing people on the float and carrying various messages. There were various banners all over the place. They were various places. There were people wearing shirts, labels, something on HIV/AIDS. There were various vehicles all over the place with labels on HIV/AIDS. There were various announcements by the information van. There were various music that were played that all talked about AIDS. And all this and all the radio stations in my region were all agog about HIV/AIDS and HIV/AIDS and what is it that we can do to try and improve the situation.
All right.
So I think with all this, for me, I think it better carry the message, and it's likely to do more of it to the trick faster than if we had heard it from the radio from another region.
All right.
So I think it was very successful in that respect.
Doc, we want to thank you for your time with us. Dr. Avia Nso is the Upper West Regional Minister. Angela Adas is back on the line. Good evening, Doc, and welcome to the program.
Good evening. Thank you.
Well, Doc, are we winning the fight against HIV and AIDS?
I believe we are. From all indications, we seem to be making progress in the correct direction. There are various indicators that show that Ghana seems to be doing much, much better than before. Today, during the commemoration of World AIDS Day, I talked about the general adult prevalence, which has decreased by over 60% in the last 10 years. The specific prevalence for specific target groups that we have been working with and new infections among these groups also seem to be on the decline or are on the decline. Generally, we seem to be doing well, but of course, there are challenges that we need to overcome on an almost daily basis, and we all endeavor to do better, because in as long as we have a single new infection in any year or a death from AIDS in any year, I don't think that we have reached the point where we want to reach as a country.
Well, we will talk about the challenges a bit, but do you see Ghana reducing further the prevalence rate and what is being done in that direction?
Yes, I do, definitely. I mean, of course, in every epidemic, once you reduce the prevalence to a certain level, it becomes even, you have to put in intensify efforts to see further progress. But I do. If we continue even at the rate that we are in implementing our interventions for specific target groups, like I said before, I'm sure that we will continue to reduce the prevalence in the country. Already we have regions like the Upper West that are recording 1.2%, 1% on occasion, and the Northern region that records prevalence of even less. And so it is indication that we should be able overall to drive down the prevalence even further in the country. I mean, like, these regions have prevalence levels that are lower than the general adult prevalence in the entire country. So if we continue to put in our efforts, we should be able to.
Well, sorry, we lost Dr. Angela L. Adaste on the line. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana Accra.
Stigmatization in this country has been addressed in a number of ways. But currently, the strategy that we are applying is working with people living with HIV who have faced stigma over the years to come out and talk about their situation. So when we have people who talk about the fact that they are HIV positive, talk about some of the challenges, real life challenges that they have faced due to stigma and discrimination and how that affects them, I think that it appeals to the hearts and the minds of people in this country. The other thing that happens is it sets a tone for discourse around HIV and AIDS. And where you have all kinds of groups coming together just to discuss the issue of HIV and AIDS and stigma in particular, I think that that talk around it, that the fact that it's no longer a taboo subject or a subject that gets people to either cringe or giggle or whatever reaction it provokes, but it gets us thinking seriously about the issues pertaining to HIV, the reduction of HIV, and stigma in particular, I think that that in itself reduces the stigma associated with HIV. When you see people who are HIV positive, who are healthy, who have normal lives, are living normal lives, are working and are productive members of our society, that in itself deals the issue of stigma around HIV. So what we are doing now is getting persons living with HIV out there to interact with our communities, and then we are also provoking a lot of talk. So somebody said, why is it that everywhere you go now, people are talking about HIV? Because that in itself deals with the negative sensations around this topic. We've been in the Upper West region for a few days, and we have tried to fellowship with in the mosques and in the church, so that right from the pulpit and through their sermons, our religious leaders can address the issues of HIV and AIDS. Mm-hmm. The need to know your status, the need to prevent acquiring infection or spread of infection, and then having acceptable attitudes towards persons living with HIV. I think that these direct, rather than, you know, indirect ways will give us some success.
What?
Unfortunately, we have not empirically measured the levels of stigma and discrimination recently, and we are undertaking or going just about to undertake what we call a stigma index study, and that will help us to know whether we have made progress since the 2008 Ghana Demographic and Health Survey was done.
And briefly, Doc, how available and affordable is the antiretroviral drugs for persons living with HIV and AIDS?
I would say it's affordable to the persons living with HIV and AIDS because antiretroviral drugs are free in this country. And previously, persons living with HIV had to pay what we call a service fee, a 5-CD service fee, each time they went in for their drugs. And this was not the cost of the drug, but a service fee. So that again, through advocacy and discourse, the consensus that we reached was, well, service fees are covered by the National Health Insurance Scheme. So if you have a person living with HIV who is registered on the health insurance, then they don't have to pay service fees or consultation fees or what you call it. So that in itself has been scrapped. Since the last one, His Excellency the President called on us to take measures to scrap that. And on the other hand, put people living with HIV on the National Health Insurance Scheme, which we are doing.
All right.
For availability, we have had serious challenges, I would say, with provision of the antiretroviral drugs. There have been times where we have had the drugs, but there has been a problem with distribution. So that some of them, some facilities have more in stock than they need and other facilities do not have. That poses a challenge. There have been recurrent times when there are specific molecules of the drugs that aren't available. And therefore, the people on treatment get some particular drugs and some they don't take over them. And then we have the issue where because we don't have enough stock in the pipeline, rather than give somebody treatment for a month or say 3 months, we give them a 2-week supply. Unfortunately, what that means is that they have to keep coming back to the health facilities for drugs. You know, where they could come 4 times, they have to come perhaps 12 times in a year. And that is a challenge. I think that if we manage to mobilize adequate resources, but not just that, the use of the resources, and we don't leave the money sitting, but we actually procure the drugs on time and in the relevant quantities, that we should be able to overcome this problem. Yes.
Doc, we want to thank you for your time with us tonight. Dr. Angela Eladas is Director General, Ghana AIDS Commission. It's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana Accra. Behind the News live on Radio Ghana Accra. Before we look at the Merchant Bank sales story, let's go to the Disability Day. And while we make all the noises for AIDS Day, the disabled in society are asking all not to forget their plight. As we inch towards another Disability Day tomorrow, the Disability Council in Ghana expects Ghanaians to equally drum support for the physically challenged in society so that they can live a worthy life. In fact, it should not be a secret by now that being born disabled or becoming physically challenged in later life, particularly in our part of the world, is the worst thing that can happen to anyone. So as the world leaves AIDS Day behind and welcomes Disability Day tomorrow, what pragmatic solutions should we find to address the myriad of problems confronting the disabled in society? And here to confront the questions I have for him in the studio is Executive Secretary of the National Council of Persons with Disability, Max Varden. Max, you are welcome to Radio Ghana Studios.
Thank you very much.
Now, you are the Executive Secretary of the Council on Disability, and I suppose you know the problems of the disabled better. As you observe another day in their honor, what can you tell us about all the challenges that the disabled in Ghana go through?
Right, I think we have to
revisit this issue of what comprises disability. You mentioned earlier that it's a big problem for people if they are born disabled or they acquire disability. I would beg to differ a little bit. What you're referring to is what was known as the medical model of disability, which basically said if a person had a particular condition, that was that person's responsibility to overcome the condition. The world has moved on to a different paradigm, which is what they call the social model, which says that it's a society's responsibility to cater for all its members and to make possible the aspirations, the realization of the aspirations and dreams of all members, so that people can live a full and fulfilled life. What this means is that we need to accept that as a society, we have to make provision for everybody, regardless of their condition, so that they are able to participate fully. It's not Kweku or Abner's problem. It is our problem. So if we talk about accessibility, for example, and there are two components to that. There's physical accessibility around the built environment or mobility, and then there's communication and accessing information. So we need to design an environment in which everybody, regardless of their condition, can get from A to B easily and safely, or can receive information that they need, again, easily and in a timely manner. Yeah? It's a social problem. We are founded in this country on two core principles, freedom and justice. You find them, these are national motto, you find them on the Independence Arch and so on. And this is a promise that the founding fathers and our constitution made to every Ghanaian, that we should be able to live our lives in freedom, with freedom to pursue our dreams and aspirations, and to be in receipt of justice, whether that's administrative justice, legal justice, or judicial justice, you know, or social justice, that we should have equity in what goes on in the country. So, if you look at the statistics pertaining to disability, we have an estimated 20% or so of the population who have a disability. But the argument that we need to appreciate is that the challenge of disability is not with the 20%. It is with the 80%. Because it is this 80% who, because of the beliefs that they have and the values and attitudes and behaviors that arise from those beliefs, we behave in ways that make life difficult for those who have various impairments or conditions. And these beliefs are extremely prejudicial. You know, they give rise to all manner of behaviors like exclusion, and we use derogatory terms, and we fail to support members of our own family if they have a disability. Often we don't even allow children to go to school because we fear the social stigma that would attach to admission that we have a child with a disability. And this is totally wrong. You know, one of the things I came across when we did some research into congenital disability was the fact that something like 55% of all human conceptions are born spontaneously. We are talking about pregnancies self-terminating without any intervention by any human. Okay? 55%, more than half of all pregnancies that women get do not go to term. Now, that has certain very important implications. The first is that it's evidence that creation, or God, or Allah, whatever you choose to call it, this superior intelligence that has created this universe and so on has a quality assurance program in place when it comes to humans, and doubtless other species as well.
Yeah.
So if the developing embryo does not match the template requirement for the spirit to take up residence, that embryo is discarded.
Mm.
Now, there's a second corollary that's very, very important, which arises from the first, which is that, therefore, if everybody has been through a quality assurance program, then everybody who gets born has been approved by creation. And if your God says, Kweku, Abna, Kwesi, Ama are okay, who are you? Who are we to say no?
Well, these challenges that you've enumerated on are indeed multifaceted and may not be possible to solve all of them, but there are particular ones that keep coming that I think we need to talk about. The issue about constructing disability-friendly edifices so that the disabled can have access to them. Are you doing something in that direction?
Oh, very much. This is a stipulation, one of the requirements of the Disability Act, that the environment be accessible for people with disability. And that's not just physical disability. As I indicated, we are also talking about communications and so on. And the solution to that is what's known as universal design, where we apply design principles that make the environment navigable by all, not just people with disability, but young children and older people, the infirm, and so on. And this means, essentially, in practical terms, defining a set of accessibility standards that people can be held to comply with. And this is a process that has been ongoing. We are nearing the end of draft accessibility standards in conjunction with the Ghana Standards Authority. We have a document so far as about 260 pages. So it's a complex thing because you have to cater for all kinds of situations and eventualities. And for example, as one example I like to use, is that if we were in a wheelchair, as things stand today, it would be very difficult for us to go and visit our grandfather's grave, because many of our cemeteries are so congested, you cannot move easily, even if you're able-bodied, from A to B.
Now, there is this issue also about reserving particular jobs for the disabled in society, because you agree with me that even though disability is not inability, there are certain jobs that the able should not compete with the disabled. For instance, manning toll gates. Are you critically looking at that?
This is a suggestion that has come up, and we have to be very careful when we talk about reserving various jobs for various categories of people and so on and so forth, because we run the risk of, as it were, ghettoizing the jobs or that particular community. We have a policy in this country, in the education sector, for example, of inclusive education. We have, as a general thrust within the disability movement worldwide, the objective of inclusion, recognizing that all people have the right to pursue whatever dreams and aspirations they have, of course, within the limits of one's of the laws of the land and without encroaching on other people's rights and so on and so forth. But this issue of reserving jobs, whilst it may be a useful temporary measure, I don't think it's one we should look at as a long-term solution. Because, as you've said, having a disability does not mean you cannot do anything. And in fact, there are many examples of people who have gone to have achieved tremendous accomplishments despite their ability. Let me give you a couple. The most successful U.S. president of all time was elected to office 4 times. Was Franklin D. Roosevelt. And he was confined to a wheelchair. It didn't mean his brain didn't work. It didn't mean his communication skills did not work. It didn't mean he had no leadership skills. That's number one. Number two, probably one of the foremost physicists in the world today, some have compared him to Einstein, is
Professor Hawking, Stephen Hawking, he also is confined to a wheelchair because of a degenerative disease that he picked up, amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, which has meant he has very limited mobility. He can barely even move his head. It hasn't stopped him from writing books and from offering some of the deepest insights into the nature of our universe that anybody has come up with. Now we have to ask ourselves, how many Theodore Franklin D. Roosevelt have we left behind in our villages? How many potential Stephen Hawkings have we left behind in our towns because we did not recognize their potential, because we wrote them off even before they had the opportunity to go to school?
It's Behind the News Live on Radio Ghana, and Max Varden is my studio guest tonight. He's the Executive Secretary of the National Council of Persons with Disability. We are discussing the problems confronting the disabled in society and how to find solutions to them. Now let's go to the phone lines. Andrew Okaikwe has worked with a lot of disabled people and knows more about them, and he's on the line to share his experience with us. Good evening, Mr. Okaikwe, and you're welcome to the program.
Good evening, madam. How are you?
I'm good. Well, can you tell us a few of the challenges you face as a disabled person in Ghana?
Before I go on, Max, how is it going?
Hello, Andrew. We are managing.
All right. Okay. One or most of the challenges that we're facing, particularly in Ghana, which it has always been a bother, is accessibility. We have the Disability Act in place for a very long time now. We've always gone through almost half a decade out of it. And we find out new buildings in our cities, in the heartlands of our towns, are all still not disability friendly. And it makes it even difficult for people who are some form of disability to even access certain buildings. Sometimes you find somebody who is visually impaired and you expect him to go to a public building that there are no elevators, and you're wondering how would such a person go. We have a situation where even our staircases all our buildings are not even improvised in any way that could make accessibility accessible to persons with disability. So that is the other important thing that we're talking about. Also, when we come to our public transport, it's the same thing. So accessibility has become a very, very major issue in our society.
In that regard, what do you want policy makers to do as a way of addressing your plight?
The important thing is I would urge civil society and government as a matter of urgency to speed up this process of accessibility, and also impose fines on owners or contractors who are putting up structures in recent times without any form of accessibility in consideration. So there is a need for an urgent radiation of the whole process or the disability law. Then also there must be the machinery that will empower policymakers to also impose penalties on individuals with buildings that are not accessible, and even our public buses and all that we can think of. So it is very important that we take it as a very serious and an urgent national issue. I will call it a national first-class issue that has to be dealt with.
Well, Mr. Okaikwe, I want to thank you for your time with us. Andrew Okaikwe has worked with a lot of disabled persons. And coming back to you, Max, we will talk about tomorrow, World Disability Day, and the activities. But why do you think persons with disabilities are mostly seen begging for alms? And is there any program to get them off our streets?
Well, I think we need to ask other questions apart from, is there any program to get them off our streets? If we got them off the streets, where would we put them? Where would we take them? And what would they do when they get there? You see, nobody in their right mind, I don't think, chooses to go and stand under the hot sun or under the rain in the street, risking their lives to beg for alms. They are there because they have no other option at the present time, because they don't have any economically marketable skills and so on. So the question that we should first ask is not where should they go. We should ask ourselves, where have they come from? Where have they come from? Because every one of them came from a family. And it is largely because of the beliefs and the attitudes we have that when we encounter disability in our family, we don't give the person the support and the encouragement and the facilities that they need in order to become independent. So what happens? They don't go to school, they learn nothing, and they end up on the streets. If we are to get rid of this menace, not this situation, in the long term, we need to start from the source, not the end bit. Having said that, yes, there are things we can do to try and encourage people to come off the streets, but we need to give them an alternative livelihood program so that they can live decent, you know, fulfill lives and so on. And that means, in part, creating jobs or creating some kind of activity that has an economic return that they can benefit from. You may be aware that there is a program called LEAP, Livelihood Enhancement Against Poverty, which is administered by the Department of Social Welfare, and that is targeted at some of our poorest households, and I believe the number at the moment, present time, is about 70,000 households. So a program like that could be extended, if the resources were available, to cater for more people. But it is a small drop in the ocean. 70,000 households equals roughly 400,000 people. And yet our population of persons with disability is about 5 million. Mm. So we are only addressing about 10% of that challenge, if you take it, you know.
Well, tomorrow is World Disability Day.
International Disability Day.
What will be done in Ghana to highlight the plight of the disabled? What activities are lined up?
Well, there are a number of functions that are taking place, both in Accra and in other regions, Eastern Region and so on. And I suppose, apart from some media interviews and so on, high profile activity that will take place is a roundtable discussion that has been called by the GFD, in which they are seeking to engage in particular the faith-based sector to put disability on the agenda to reach their various congregations. And I'm glad to see that GFD is responding to this proposal that we put out as a council over 2 years ago, that to address disability properly, we need to understand where the behaviors arise from and address the origins of the behaviors of the 80%. And I mentioned beliefs, that where we associate disability with witchcraft, with juju, with evil, all kinds of negative connotations. And it's because of this that we shy away from disability. So if we are to change that, yeah, we need to understand where do these beliefs come from, and then address the sources of the beliefs. And from what I see, you know, we've got beliefs that originate, certainly some from religious dogma. There are also beliefs that originate from scientific dogma. Then there's ignorance, there's superstition, there's prejudice. You know, so all of these beliefs come from different areas. If you encounter ignorance, you inform. Where you encounter superstition, you educate. where you encounter prejudice, you bring in opinion formers and the media personalities and so on, who can address those prejudices. Where it's religious, you bring in the religious sector, Christian, Muslim, traditional, and so on, so that the misperceptions that people have can be addressed by the best people, the people who are best qualified to redirect those misperceptions.
Well, we've just received a text message from Edward Yenikon in Nigeria, and he's saying that the Ghana National Federation of the Disabled Executives should let the government publish the total common fund of all MMDAs on the internet to enable the disabled to get their true 2% share in the common fund.
Well, the government does publish the allocation to the various districts, and the GFD should know what the figures are, because they are part of the stakeholders who receive these figures.
So what will you tell anyone who is disabled at this moment before you leave us?
That you are not alone. That there is a very strong movement, concerted effort to change the dynamics in this country where disability is concerned. That we have some very far-reaching programs, which are in some cases unique in this world, that should cause very significant change in the environment in which we all live.
And briefly also, what would be your suggestion to the society towards making life meaningful for persons with disabilities?
Focus on the ability, not the disability. Because ultimately, none of us is perfect. Yeah, we all have our challenges here and there. But we don't dismiss other people because they have a different challenge from us. We ask, former President Kennedy once asked, ask not what your country can do for you, ask what you can do for your country. In the same vein, we need to ask ourselves, what can we do for our fellow man to enable him or her to live a more fulfilled life?
Max, we want to thank you for your time with us in the studio. It's been a pleasure having you here. Max Varden is the Executive Secretary of the National Council of Persons with Disability, and we've been discussing some of the problems confronting the disabled in society and how to address them. And it's Behind the News live on Radio Ghana. We are sorry we are unable to bring you the story on the sale of Merchant Bank because of challenges. We will certainly come your way with the story on our subsequent programs. And let's read some of your text messages. Julius Ameko says, to avoid stigmatization against people living with HIV and AIDS, we should stop indulging in acts that put them at risk of acquiring the virus. And Z from WA says, Mr. President, please, we the people of WA East are appealing to you to appoint a DCE for our district. Many thanks for all your text messages. And this is where we end tonight's edition of the program. My producers have been Christopher Sedu, Edmund Tete, Brian Sagama, Phyllis Kofi, and Celestine Avi. Isaac Yawedu controlled the sounds, and Abraham Donko read the summaries. My name is Agatha Samoa, and you have a lovely night.